Hello and welcome to the No BS Approach to Motherhood podcast, hosted by Catherine Hay and Shelley McKenzie. We are both mothers and clinical nutritionists who specialize in women's health. We are here to not only bring you the most up-to-date nutritional and health advice when it comes to fertility, pregnancy, postpartum, and children's nutrition, but our main goal is to break through the BS that can come with motherhood. No topic is off limits, so grab a cuppa or a glass of wine and join us for another raw and real conversation surrounding motherhood. This week's episode is proudly sponsored by Habitual Beauty. Habitual Beauty take a holistic approach to beauty and well-being. They believe in taking a 360-degree approach and supporting your inner health as much as your outer beauty.
In a recent third-party trial conducted by Beauty Heaven, 90% of testers noticed an improvement in the overall appearance or radiance of their skin after using their clean Australian skincare products.
I have personally been using their skincare products since I went low-tox a few years ago, and I absolutely adore this range. In today's episode, we're going to be diving into adult acne and why your skincare is so important. So let's start by talking about the prevalence of adult acne. So it's one of the most common skin disorders and occurs primarily at puberty in about 95% of individuals. It's more common in females than males. And there's two subtypes. There's a persistent, which is a continuation from adolescence into adulthood. And this counts for 80% of cases. It tends to be mild to moderate. And then there's late onset. So initial symptom presentation is generally from 25 years onwards, and it is 20% of cases and tends to be more severe. Let's talk about why this occurs from a nutritional naturopathic. Obviously, we have a very different approach compared to Western medicine, who you may bring this up to with a GP, and they will often recommend some form of, you know, Roaccutane or something along those lines. But again, from a naturopathic nutritionist point of view, we like to do this from a root cause. And we know that there are several triggers that can affect adult acne. So Cappy, did you want to dive into some of those root causes for us?
Yeah, and I hold adult acne very close to my heart because, and it's very timely, this episode is being recorded now because I literally just put up on my stories answering a post about how I cleared up my acne. And I obviously didn't go into too many specifics about my own journey because it is a very individualized approach because we want to understand that root cause. And it's very multifactorial in the sense that it can stem from a number of different reasons, like you were just saying. And some of the main ones that we have to take into consideration are hormonal acne. That's one of the biggest ones that we see in clinic. But then we've also got gut-induced acne. So this is the gut-skin axis, which we'll go into more in depth about today. And then we also have anxiety-driven acne as well, stress response. There are so many things that it can exacerbate our elimination pathways. And our skin is our largest elimination organ. So when we're not eliminating something properly from the body, we're going to see those manifestations in our skin, those irritations, those pustules, those pimples. And it's not just about supporting the skin topically, we must support the skin internally as well. So you are what you eat. You know, you always hear that saying a lot of the time, and a lot of that will manifest in the skin too. So we're looking at supporting the liver and liver clearance of hormones. We're looking at our detoxification pathways, and we're obviously looking at the gut and how it's eliminating toxins via the bowels too. So it's a very, like, we've got to, I guess, look at it from a bird's eye view and understand those factors that are contributing to acne, and then treat accordingly. Use pathology, understand dietary and lifestyle measures. What do we have to remove to decrease the inflammatory response and so forth?
Yeah, so let's start with the hormonal side of things then, and what pathology we need to be looking at. Obviously, we're starting with things like looking at our androgens and if there's an increase there, because we know that androgens can also lead to excess sebum production, clogged pores, acne outbreaks, all of those, but there's other factors there as well. So can we kind of chat about the hormonal aspect first?
And this is where I do bring in a lot of hormone pathology testing too, to understand, is it androgen driven? Is it estrogen driven? Because we also see an onset with acne with imbalanced or unmaintained estrogen fluctuations throughout the cycle. Some patients present with worse skin in the luteal phase, and their skin usually heals up in the follicular phase, so after the menstrual bleed, and that's from those fluctuations of estrogen. So understanding what is the hormones that are driving that is really important to the treatment of acne as well. So doing specific blood tests like your testosterone, like your calculated free testosterone, sex hormone binding globulin, estrogen, prolactin, androstenedione, you can look at follicular stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone. I think all of those, that combination in the follicular phase on day two or three of the bleed is really helpful, so we can start to see what's happening in that first part of the cycle. And then doing your peak luteal blood tests after ovulation as well, where we're looking at progesterone and estrogen. Is there an estrogen dominant picture here? Are we not producing enough of our progesterone, or is there other contributing factors there that may lead into that exacerbation of those hormonal breakouts? And a lot of the time when hormones are dysregulated, we're seeing hormonal acne present along the jawline, around the chin, down the neck. They're quite cystic. They're painful. A lot of the times they don't come into a nice little white head that we can pop. And this is where we go, okay, we need to understand the inflammatory drivers behind that acne as well. So we want to look at inflammatory markers too, like your CRPs, like your gut microbiome, because we want to bring that into the mix as too when we're looking at hormones. But they are the main hormone drivers to adult acne.
And so then let's shift gears to the gut microbiome. How does the gut play into hormones?
Yeah. So the role of the skin is to protect the internal environment, temperature regulation, and water retention. The skin is constantly undergoing renewal, resulting in effective epidermal turnover, which is your skin cell turnover, where the skin regenerates itself to maintain homeostasis, which is balance. So there are many layers to the skin that can be described as bricks and mortar. So it's like the glue, and we need collagen to kind of web all of those bricks together. So it's really important when we're looking at the skin barrier. So different cells serve as bricks, and cholesterol, fatty acids, collagen to help make up the mortar that holds the bricks together. This acts as an effective skin barrier that helps preserve the skin moisture, tone, and texture. The human gut hosts a myriad of diverse bacteria organisms that are constantly communicating with our skin bacteria. So the skin being the largest organ of the body that hosts its own microbiome, and there is a direct link between the gut and the skin. So this is where I get really excited, because of the skin microbiome and the gut microbiome. Dysbiosis, so meaning there's an imbalance of our good gut bacteria versus our pathogenic bacteria, where we're going to see those manifestations on the skin. And that's where acne vulgaris can be present, because it's a bacteria living on the skin. So it has been shown through scientific research, there are a number of anti-inflammatory bacteria that translocate from the gut to the skin to help fight off infection and support healthy skin renewal. So that's what we always want to be maintaining within a healthy gut microbiome. When there is dysbiosis in the gut, it usually manifests with skin infections and inflammation. Common skin conditions that have been studied to show how the gut can impact health, especially psoriasis, dermatitis, acne, and eczema. So healthy skin always starts within. That's my motto in clinic. So again, we're checking our bowels. We're checking what's going on with the gut. And we're using functional pathology here, such as a comprehensive stool analysis test, to understand the composition of the microbiome. Is there pathogenic bacteria? Is there parasites, SIBO infections, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, fungal and yeast infections? Gosh, candida. You can see candida present on the skin and the mouth and the oral microbiome, the vagina microbiome, more often than not. So we know those microbiomes are being impacted as well. So basically, if you don't have a healthy, thriving gut microbiome, you're not going to have a healthy skin microbiome. It's basically physically impossible because of that dysregulation.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because we always talk about how there's certain symptoms, and often when we're looking at symptoms within our body, we're looking at things like our digestive symptoms and what have you. But acne is a clear indication that something is not right within your body. That is your body's way of screaming at you that something needs to shift.
Absolutely. And it's fundamental, just basics 101, not drinking enough water. Therefore, you're not able to remove toxins efficiently out of the body via urine and feces. It's looking at dietary. Is your diet, I guess, pro-inflammatory? Is there a lot of hydrogenated vegetable oils and trans fats coming in? Is there a lot of refined carbohydrates and refined sugars coming in that would exacerbate inflammation? And therefore, we can see pimples. I know I'm guilty. If I go out, you know, when I'm on annual leave and living my best life and having all those beautiful cocktails, my skin will break out because I'm not, it's not used to that, I guess, that verdict of pro-inflammatory foods. And I'm not here to demonize food in any shape, way or form, but if you have acne, there are certain measures that we want to take in place to reduce that inflammatory load. And that can be coming from dietary alone as well.
Yeah. And I think if you are like, you do this beautifully, Cappy, like if you go out and have those sugary cocktails and things, you almost just know that your skin is going to need a little bit of love and your gut's going to need a little bit of love. And so then you have a plan in place to get your body, I don't want to say back on track, but you know what I mean? To reduce that inflammation and to kind of support your systems again. And the clear up time for you is pretty quick mostly.
Absolutely. And I think if you've had adult acne, you're always going to be prone to having that odd spot come back or something like that, because that's like your inflammatory default. So exactly like you said, Charlotte, I don't put any pressure on myself. I just go, okay, if I'm indulging and having a great time and this is food for my soul and it's medicine for my mind, I might have a few pimples that week. That's fine. I just heal it, get on top of it, and then we move on. It doesn't impact my day-to-day. It doesn't impact my mental health. But rewind to 2018, and basically since I was in my early 20s when I came off the pill, I had quite severe adult acne on and off, successfully managed and unsuccessfully managed. And back then I also didn't know I had endometriosis, so there was always this missing link to my acne presentation. After doing significant gut support, you know, liver support, all the rest of it, hormone support, I was like, why is there still this acne that would flare every once in a while? And it's since my diagnosis with endometriosis and completely changing my diet and lifestyle that I had now acne free, and I will only have a flare up if I'm highly, highly stressed or eat highly inflammatory foods that my body loves at the time, but doesn't love for my skin. Personal journey, which, yeah, anyway.
Which is, no, but it's really helpful because anyone that's listening to this is probably also on their own personal journey. When you hear about it from a personal but a clinical perspective, it really does help. So thank you. Let's talk about some dietary interventions. So obviously it's really important to understand what your root cause is, and that's going to obviously determine what dietary interventions and what lifestyle, or not lifestyle, but what dietary interventions and what supplement protocols you're on as well. We're going to dive into supplements because one of my bugbears is everyone just thinks, oh, go on Vitex and that will cure your acne, but it can actually exacerbate acne as well, which we'll go into, because it really does matter. Like your blood pathology, particularly if it is that hormonal profile, like it does matter what you then do next, right? Yeah. So let's talk about some dietary interventions to begin with. Obviously, you've got your increase of omega-3s, but yeah, do you want to dive into that side?
Yeah, and I look, there's a lot of research around acne and how dairy. Now, this is a big one that we're seeing in clinic. And again, this works for 70% of my acne clients. And then there's that 30% removing dairy has not impacted their skin whatsoever. They still have it. So again, this is why we don't just use a blanket approach. Come off cow's dairy and you're going to have the best skin ever. For me, it was a huge turning point for my skin and my endometriosis coming off cow dairy. So that is something that I always take into consideration in clinic when we're looking at stubborn hormonal acne, heavy painful periods, and the manifestation of those skin irritants on the skin itself, looking at those pustules. So cow dairy is a big one. Most people will find their acne will reduce once stopping it. I'm not talking about sheep's and goat's cheese here because I love those. But that is something that I do, again, work with my clients on that one-to-one basis is removing cow dairy an option, because we do that for about 8 weeks. Now, your skin cycles through new skin cells every 6 weeks. So we always want to do a treatment strategy longer than 6 weeks to see how that irritation has decreased as well. So cow dairy can be a big pro-inflammatory protein for some acne sufferers. So I just wanted to mention that. But in terms of healing the skin, your lipids, oh my gosh, we love omega-3s. Absolutely love omega-3s because we want to support that skin barrier, the texture, the tone of the skin as well. And our fats do that. Our cells are basically fat. They have a phospholipid bilayer around our skin cells. So we want to make sure we're having lots of our omega-3s in the diet. I love vitamin C. I love vitamin A. I love vitamin E. I love collagen. Again, when I was saying before, we need those nutrients and those antioxidants to scavenge any free radical damage caused by the bacteria that's living on the skin and to help promote the healing and rejuvenation of all those tissues of the body as well. So that's where these antioxidants come in. They web back together. The mortar of those skin cells that are being held together to create that barrier and to support our thermoregulation. So there's some key nutrients there as well. Zinc. We can't do an acne protocol without zinc because zinc is really incredible for wound healing. So again, if we've got active acne and we've got really big sores, we want to prevent those sores from scarring. And a lot of the times, and I have suffered with this too, is acne scarring. So the more we can get on top of that scarring before it becomes quite, I guess, debilitating because you can see it there every day and then that affects your stress and then you're looking at that every day. Zinc is a key mineral that I use to support wound healing as well.
Just on the dairy picture as well, the A1 casein stimulates IGF-1, which can increase that acne. And so IGF-1 can be involved in acne because it can aggravate through the upregulation of inflammation biomarkers. So yeah, we're definitely looking at that inflammation picture there. If you were to take out dairy, do you remove A1 and A2?
I remove all cow dairy. Yeah. All cow dairy. I keep in sheep's and goat's dairy, but all cow dairy is gone. Yeah.
Mm. The other one to look at as well is if you've got increased, it's SHBG, often soy is steered away from. There's a lot of misconception around soy as a whole food product, but soy can actually help if it's coming from that increased SHBG, which is your sex hormone binding globulin, and that you'd be able to tell through a blood pathology as well. So soy can be really beautiful and have anti-inflammatory effects and the anti-adrenic effect as well.
Yeah. And it's a phytoestrogen too. So if there is this any issues with your estrogen fluctuation throughout your menstrual cycle, having that there, and I only recommend organic soy, which I know you do too, Shell. And like your flaxseed meal and your flaxseeds, these are all fantastic to support estrogen metabolism as well. So I think soy was demonized for so long. There is soy and there's soy as well. Like you don't want to be touching any of that genetically modified soy. That is not something that we'd ever suggest, but your organic soy can be really beautiful for some of these hormone dysregulations.
Yeah, your organic and your non-GMO. So these foods are things like your tofu, your tempeh, boiled soybeans, so white soybeans, edamame beans, miso, soy milk as well, as long as it doesn't have all of the yuck stuff in it. So bonsoy or soy boy is a two that are clean. But yeah, ideally it's starting with about 50 milligrams of your whole food soy a day. So that might look like 100 grams of either your boiled soybeans is 65 milligrams. Edamame would be 100 grams is 48 milligrams. You know, your tofu, 100 grams is 22 milligrams of your soy. And we're looking at getting in around that 50 milligrams. So yeah, don't be shy, you know, and don't stay away from your soy thinking that's the worst thing you can do because it's not.
And especially, if you've had it confirmed by your blood pathology that you have issues with some of these androgens that may be in excess. And again, zinc will be really great to kind of bring those down to a degree as well. So I think if you've got that clear picture, get into your soys, you know, get into some of these other foods that contain like things like your zinc is, I think zinc foods like your oysters, nuts and your seeds, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds are a really good food source to have in there, not just for zinc, but all those micro minerals that again support hormone regulation if there is inflammatory hormonal skin.
And then also looking at your bitter foods, obviously, to support your liver function as well, which you've talked about, Cappy. So your bitter foods are things like your cruciferous vegetables, so your broccoli, kale, rocket, cauliflower, those kind of things. For that excess estrogen picture, we're looking at ideally 3 to 5 cups of your cruciferous vegetables within a week, which is pretty easy to get there. You're also looking at spices like ginger, pepper to be adding to your food. Herbs would be your thyme, rosemary, sage. But then also you've got other things like apple cider vinegar, lemon. I just always promote drinking them out of a straw or adding them into salad dressings, things like that. But you're just wanting to protect your teeth enamel if you are going to be using those as well. Spearmint tea, I also really love. It's anti-androgenic as well. So I love incorporating spearmint tea. You're going to need at least like 2 to 3 cups to get that medicinal amount in there. But that's another really nice one also. Any other dietary stuff that you would recommend?
Look, there are some clients that really respond well to gluten-free. And this, again, is just more so removing high refined carbohydrates. So, again, I'm not here to demonize, but this is just another part of that puzzle that we do see improvements with inflammatory skin conditions, especially acne. And this is just focusing more on our whole foods, ancient grains. So our buckwheats, our quinoas, our amaranth, you know, really bringing in those whole food grains instead of going for that highly processed wheat and flour products, which again have no nutritional value. So therefore, if there is inflammation in the body, it can exacerbate those inflammatory conditions too. So, your main one, and obviously refined sugar. We can't have the acne discussion without talking about refined sugar, because we know, you can Google these links, they're everywhere. The research is there, how inflammatory high sugar diets are. So things like your soft drinks, your commercial juices. It was really interesting. My husband the other day goes, so I just felt like he was sick, and he goes, I felt like a bottle of orange juice because I just wanted some vitamin C. And I was like, oh yeah, cool. And he goes, I can't guess how many teaspoons of sugar, guess how many grams of sugar was in that one bottle. I said, how many? He goes, 50.
What, like how big was the bottle? Like just a small?
No, I think it was like probably like half 500 mils. And I'm like, did you drink all of that? And he goes, yeah. He was at work, so he was exerting himself. Yeah. That is unbelievable. That's more than a can of Coke.
Whoa.
Can of Coke's, I think, 35. That was more. So, you know, it's these other hidden sugars when we're looking at the normal Aussie diet that we're seeing these hidden sugars. And sugar's sugar, whether you're getting it from a banana or whether you're getting it from your Mars bar or your orange juice, sugar's sugar. Yes, your orange juice, if it's cold pressed and it's got its fiber, is more nutrient dense. Yes, that banana has minerals and potassium and all the rest of it there and fiber. However, sugar's sugar. So this is the thing, if you're having a diet, you just want to be really mindful of your high sugar consumption, because that will exacerbate your skin condition significantly too.
And just remembered, we dove into hormonal obviously and gut, but we haven't talked about the stress response.
Yeah. So excuse me, I have a lot, oh my gosh, I have a lot to say about anxiety. And I've spoken about anxiety on here so much. You know, it's a big underlying, I guess, manifestation of inflammation in the body. So, and we see prolonged stress causes not only emotional discomfort, but physiological. And a lot of that is coming, that can come in the form of acne if you are an acne sufferer. So anxiety has been linked to skin symptoms of burning, itching, crawling-like sensations, hot and cold. When the body is stressed, it will not prioritize normal body functioning. Hence, you will not feel like you have your beautiful glowing skin. So skin issues can flare in the presence of elevated cortisol, so our stress hormone, and can cause hyperstimulation to the skin cells. So stress and anxiety is often overlooked when we're looking at that bird's eye view of that holistic health picture with skin manifestations. And this is where we really want to look at, okay, what does the stress picture look like? What are you doing for free in your lifestyle that can support you positively to combat the inflammatory response to your skin? And this is where I've been having these conversations countless times this week in clinic. I can prescribe you all the dietary advice and all the supplement advice for what we're working on. But what you can do for your stress is free. You can go for a walk. You can get out into nature. You can listen to meditation music. You can journal. You can do all of these supportive practices, which again is all scientifically proven to reduce the stress response. So it makes a huge emphasis in clinic, because if we're not on top of our mental health, we're not on top of our physical health. We cannot have one without the other. And I've said this numerous times on here, they are interconnected. So anything that we can do in our lifestyle is going to positively impact the inflammation of our acne as well.
Absolutely. So let's talk about supplements.
So what do you use usually, or do you get many acne people through in pregnancy and the rest of it?
Yeah, I do. And I'm very much, you know, starting with diet and lifestyle first, but obviously things like your omegas are really important. But I guess it really does depend. And again, going back to what's actually happening for you and why is your acne there? So for example, and I'm just going to read you through a couple of different scenarios, I guess. So I mentioned before Vitex. It is commonly known, many people, even non-naturopaths on Instagram, like they might be a nutritionist or whatever, commonly prescribing Vitex for acne. But if you've got high testosterone, high luteinizing hormone, this isn't going to work for you. So basically Vitex can influence the function of the pituitary gland, which affects the production of various hormones, including like your prolactin and your LH, so your luteinizing hormone. And this can actually affect sebum production and skin health and potentially lead to acne flare-ups. So I have some clients who will come to me on Vitex and they're not getting results for their acne. But when we actually look at their pathology, it's because they've got the high testosterone or high luteinizing hormone and or both. And so that's not going to be the answer for them. For those clients, you're really looking at like your licorice and your cinnamon. You're looking at your myonicetol, your magnesium, chromium, zinc, and then also that lower GI diet and spearmint tea, which I mentioned. You know, so it really does depend on what's going on for you. If you've got higher DEAs, again, we're looking at your withania, we're looking at your magnesium, glycine, we're looking at obviously the Honest Health Coast stress and sleep support, but we're trying to lower that cortisol response. So then those stress management things that you just mentioned are going to be really important there. If it's insulin resistance with low SHBG, for example, we're looking at bringing in your soy, your myonicetol, your magnesium. We're looking again at the ground flaxseed, the spearmint tea, you know, like there's, I think it really is an individual approach, but your blood pathology again is going to be the best place to start.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You've taken the words out of my mouth. And I think supplementation is very much, like you said, based on the individual.
It is. But as you've mentioned, a couple of things, like all acne presentations are going to benefit from your omega-3s, your, you know, your zinc, your probiotics, vitamin D. Going low tox with your skincare is going to be really important. Cutting out and minimizing, as you mentioned, like the inflammatory foods, looking at that stress management. That is for everybody. But then there's going to be other factors driving that where you really need to get a little bit more specific as to what you're taking, why you're taking, particularly if we're looking at the herbal side of things from a supplementation point of view.
Yeah. And what's really interesting, Vitex is thrown in every hormone, again, air quotes, hormone balancing blend out there, right? And anyone will go off and buy those. And then again, people are, why isn't my hormone and all acne clearing? Because those people it's not specific for. So again, bringing it back to that other episode when we did supplements versus supplements, again, not everything's going to work for you based on your own unique pathology and biochemistry.
For sure. And that driver as to why you've got the acne, that's where it all comes back down to. Like that's why going to your GP and getting prescribed like Roaccutane or something, yeah, might clear it up for a little bit, but that root cause is going to be really important to get on top of their acne and to clear it up.
And this is a thing, you know, just touching a little bit on like Roaccutane, I get numerous clients coming through my door on low grade antibiotics that they have been on 6 to 12 months for. So you can only imagine what that is doing to their gut microbiome. Yes, it may clear the skin from a bacterial perspective, but the antibiotics are only working if it is a strong bacterial infection in the skin. A lot of my clients are taking it. They've come to me and they've gone, I've been on this antibiotic for 6 months and it's done nothing for my skin because it's not the root cause. Your hormones are causing this. So I have to do significant amounts of gut cleanup, gut work, rebuilding the beneficial microflora within the gut microbiome to get results for these clients. But the damage and the inflammation that those treatments exacerbate long term, and this is why people who are on Roaccutane, yes, it might work, but their acne is generally coming back once they stop 12 to 24 months time, because it actually, that root cause hasn't been addressed and hasn't been supported properly.
And if you're planning on conception and wanting to try for a baby, like, you cannot be on Roaccutane, you know. And so then what happens?
And you have to get your liver function test every 3 months on Roaccutane, sometimes every month, depending on your profile, because of how the side effects of that drug. Now, I get it. I so get it. When you have terrible skin and nothing is working and you are just like, give me that quick fix, I can't bear to look at myself in the mirror. I have been there. I get it. I've never taken Roaccutane. I have taken low dose antibiotics in the past. I get it. You know, you will just do anything to make yourself feel better. So please, I hope you know, I empathize so much with these
Absolutely.
People listening to this, but just know, even if you are on Roaccutane, we can do some incredible work to support your body. So when you come off it, we've got those measures in place to support healthy skin as well. So nothing, I guess, transpired later on with that acne returning.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Anything else that we're wanting to talk about here?
I think that was quite in depth around the acne picture.
All right. Lovely. Well, we'll wrap it up there.
Perfect.
See you guys.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. That way we can continue to inspire and reach more mamas around the globe. If you would like to get in contact, request a guest or topic, then head to the No BS Approach to Motherhood Instagram page and send us a direct message. Otherwise, until next episode, stay sane, mama.